Oh, hey, Brian, what's up? I just saw you over there squatting 800 pounds, and I noticed your shirt that you're wearing.
That's right. I wouldn't be able to squat like I do if I didn't have the faith of Jesus on my chest. This is my active faith sports shirt.
That's amazing. Hey, Brian, where can I get one of those shirts?
If you head on over to activefaithsports.com, use the promo code NRP116, you could get 15% off.
No way.
Way.
Okay, I'm gonna go do that right now.
You better and get swole like me.
That's right.
Hi, this is Michael Pulser from the Personal Upgrade Podcast, and you're listening to Not Religious.
Hey, you know, this is my 10th cup of coffee today.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's
cold outside and I'm tired. You know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, right? This morning. And I was staring at the ceiling wide awake.
I wonder why.
And I said, I have to get up in like 5 hours.
Right.
But I can't go to sleep. So I busted out the NyQuil. I am so groggy and it is so cold. Coffee has been my best friend today. But welcome back to the Not Religious Podcast, party people. My name is Blake.
I'm Brian.
And he's Brian. And we did not do an episode last week. However, I hope everyone enjoyed the Halloween episode. In the case of Robert, we ended up conjuring a demon.
Not on purpose.
Not on purpose.
Don't blame me.
So look.
Wasn't my fault.
Not pointing any fingers.
Not my fault. Might have been your fault.
Yeah. We're both drinking hot coffee tonight.
Because it's cold.
Because it's cold out there. There's no cold brew here tonight because it's freezing. This never happens, you know?
What, it being cold?
Well, it being cold this early in into the fall.
Yeah.
It's usually still pretty hot. There's been several occasions on Christmas Day where I've had shorts on.
So this is still fall.
We're still in the fall. So it's not even Thanksgiving yet.
Gotcha.
And it's pretty chilly. There's like a freak snowstorm somewhere, and it's just cold, but we're here, and we have the love for each other to keep us warm in this studio. There's a space heater next to me right here.
That's right.
Keeping my butt warm.
That's right.
Nothing
but the finest for your butt.
Nothing but the finest for this tush. I'm excited to be back this week. There's something that came up there's my iPad. It's finally up and running.
Gotcha.
This past week, we realized there's people in the Christian music industry that are real jerks, to say the least. And we really wanted to touch on this kind of do a deep dive into what we think may be causing this, because I don't know if anyone's ever brought it up to this gentleman.
You can't touch him. I mean, he's untouchable.
Apparently, he is untouchable. We'll get to that. Brian, again, I'm excited to be back this week.
Definitely.
It feels like it's been forever since we did an episode, because we recorded an episode on a Tuesday, the Tuesday before Halloween. So it's been extra long this time, but I feel refreshed, feel like I'm ready to rock, and we can get on into it. But before we do that, let's see what's happening in the news this week. This one seemed appropriate since we're planning a trip here pretty soon.
We are?
No, not me and you.
Oh.
Me and my wife. Oh. Planning a trip to Disney within the next month or so. But it ties in with the podcast really well, too. So a church leader allegedly embezzled money for a Disney Club 33 membership. You ever heard of that?
No, what is that?
Club 33. So there is like an exclusive club involved with like the Disney parks called the Club 33. And apparently a church leader who would never do anything like this embezzled money. a former Los Angeles church leader was recently accused of stealing over $11 million from a church.
How much is the Club 33?
Pretty pricey from what I've heard. It's pretty exclusive. But stealing over $11 million from a church in order to purchase a home as well as a membership for Disneyland's exclusive and expensive Club 33. KTLA report, this comes from InsideTheMagic.net, by the way.
Of course.
KTLA reports that Charles Thomas Sebesta, a 54-year-old former leader of... Now, tell me how this church's name is supposed to be pronounced, okay?
I shall do my best.
Fifth Church of Christ, comma, Scientist. That's the name of the church.
Yeah.
How do you...
You got it.
Is that it? I mean, is that it? What's with the comma?
You got to put a comma in there so it's not Christian Scientist.
It's just scientist. Anyway, Fifth Church of Christ Scientist, comma, Scientist in Los Angeles was arrested on a Monday. This is a few months ago, but it's a funny article. On Monday, August 26th, on a federal indictment alleging he made false payments from the church's bank accounts and siphoned off proceeds from the 2008 sale of the church's Hollywood Boulevard flagship location. Currently, Sebesta faces 6 counts of wire fraud, 5 counts of bank fraud, and 2 counts of aggravated identity theft. What is aggravated identity theft?
You know.
What? Yeah, I don't. That's why I was asking. Aggravated identity theft. In a nutshell, Sebesta reportedly forged checks and used his position as board chairman at Fifth Church of Christ, comma, Scientist, to steal over $11 million over the course of a decade. And it seems as though he was quite the Disney fan.
Ooh.
Or at least he was a fan of getting into an exclusive Disney eatery, since he used some of the stolen dollars to purchase a membership to Club 33, the historic, expensive, and exclusive club at Disneyland Park that has been around for almost as long as Disneyland has. So it is the elite of the elite that gets into the Club 33.
Gotcha.
If you're unfamiliar with the Club 33, it is an exclusive dining location that started initially at Disneyland Park in Anaheim, but has since expanded to other Disney parks around the world. Disneyland's Club 33 is situated in an inconspicuous location in New Orleans Square. It's an exclusive club, so a small percentage of Disney fans actually get the chance to visit and dine there, and it's pretty expensive. The annual Club 33 fee is around $10,000, and there's an additional initiation fee of $25,000. Yes. The reports that Sebesta spent time at Club 33 wooing entertainment executives and sports professionals. That's usually who gets into those things anyway. It's just famous people. With the eatery's lavish dining experiences. Currently, they're unsure if Sebesta will be revoked of his Club 33 membership.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Does he get to keep it?
Still unsure. Now, this was a few months ago, so maybe they've come to some type of conclusion. But anyway, Club 33 is a bucket list item for many Disney fans, so we're not surprised that a former Southern California church leader want a piece of this elite Disney magic, especially when celebrities and prominent Disney figures are members. But is Club 33 worth stealing millions of dollars to get into? Which thing?
Yes.
Would you steal money from a church to get into Club 33?
No, I have no
desire.
What
if the food is really good?
I don't get it.
What if you're sitting around with like Derek Jeter or something?
No. Maybe good.
What if Carrot Top walks in?
Carrot Top?
You know he's up in Club 33.
That's who you're going with? Carrot Top.
Maybe. He's cool.
Yeah.
So with all of Sebesta's charges, he could face 250 years in federal prison. Now explain to me this. I've never understood that. Why do we sentence people to 250 years in prison?
You just never know what
some freak accident.
Technology.
What if he makes it?
Right.
And I just let him go?
251, baby.
He's out.
I'm out.
Anyway, that's all I got. So there you go. A church leader, Brian. Who would have thought?
Who would have thunk it?
Would embezzle money.
Who would have thunk it?
Anywho, let's take a break, and we will come back in just a minute after you hear from a word of our sponsors, and we'll get into our discussion for this week.
What's up, everyone in podcast land? This is Brian.
And I'm Blake.
And we are from the Not Religious Podcast, here to talk to you about one of our sponsors, PillarOfHopeApparel.com.
All right, Brian, they got some shirts, they got some hats, they got phone cases, whatever you need. It's awesome.
And if you go right now and go to your cart, fill it up, put in the promo code NRP116, you'll get 10% off your order.
Jeez, 10%?
10%. That's PillarOfHopeApparel.com. Promo code NRP116.
Check them out.
All right.
All right.
Up until this week, have you ever heard of Keith Getty?
No.
Okay.
Have you?
Never. Not once.
Have you ever heard of his songs?
So, In Christ Alone, I know, is his big one. And I think I might have heard, I think we might have played it at church.
In Christ before, Alone?
But it wasn't his version of it. It was
Chris Tomlin's.
Oh, God. No, I think it might have been maybe a Hillsong or something, a version of it. But it seems like I've played that song in a church setting before. But then again, I've been doing worship music for over 10 years of my life. So I've played a lot. But yes, so I was sitting at church last week in the green room, just kind of scrolling through my phone in between services. There's a worship drummers page on Facebook that I'm a part of, and saw this article shared, and saw it shared again on a Gear Talk Praise and Worship Facebook page. So I looked into it, started reading the article, and I sent it to you. Immediately, it's like this guy. So, what I'm going to do is read from this main article, and just kind of different bullet points from the article, and we can kind of touch on it as we go. And if you have a thought, please feel free to drop it in there. But once we get to the end of this, what I really want to do, I want to look at Keith Getty and try to dissect what his problem might be. You know, this is kind of unfair.
I mean, to him, he doesn't have a problem.
He doesn't have a problem at all. But in short, this Keith Getty guy is a songwriter in the Christian music industry, but he is focused more on hymns, and he kind of wants to write modern hymns because he hates contemporary Christian music, and he hates modern worship. And maybe hates a strong word.
I don't know. I don't know.
He might as well hate it because he talks major trash. Right. He has been forever. We looked up an article from the same, both of these articles come from the christianpost.com. There's an article all the way back to 2011. I found where he was still talking trash about modern worship. So, you know, anyway, we'll get into that. So, this comes from ChristianPost.com. In Christ Alone, writer Keith Getty is warning church leaders about the modern worship movement, which he describes as one of, quote, cultural relevance that is utterly dangerous and is contributing to the de-Christianizing of God's people. And then in an interview with the Christian Post, Getty said that many modern worship songs focus on emotionalism rather than sound doctrine and scriptural truths.
All right, let's stop there.
Yeah.
I could see that.
You think you can agree with him on that?
I would not say the majority.
Yeah.
But I've heard that topic before.
Yeah.
That a lot of stuff is just touchy-feely, happy-go-lucky Jesus songs.
Yeah.
Emotional songs. So I've heard that before.
Sure.
So I think that's an okay argument to say. I would not say the majority.
Yeah.
I would say there's a minority group of just worship songs that are like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a quote from him. An authentic generation doesn't begin with catharsis. It has to begin with an authentic picture of the God of the Bible, he explained. Over 75% of what are called the great hymns of the faith talk about eternity, heaven, hell, and the fact that we have peace with God, yet less than 5% of modern worship songs talk about eternity. Where does he get these statistics from?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, 75% of statistics are made up.
Are they?
Many worship songs are focused on this earth, Getty said. I believe that the modern worship movement is a movement for cultural relevance. It is a de-Christianizing of God's people. It's utterly dangerous, and I have no quibbles, saying that enough is enough. This can't happen to build an authentic generation.
Okay.
I'm going to stop there.
Okay.
An authentic generation.
Mm-hmm. What, I mean...
I don't think that you can get any more authentic than young people, especially nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
People will talk trash about millennials and say what you will, but millennials are some of the most upfront, honest, and authentic people that I have ever seen.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Of a lot of generations. So if you are trying to reach these people because these are the future church, if that's what you want to call them, if these are the future church leaders, future Christians, whatever, I think setting it, when it comes to music, that's something that for me is very important. When we were in between churches, that was one of the key things that we wanted to find, was somewhere where the worship was like actually taken serious, you know? Well, I shouldn't say taken serious, but where it's, you can tell there's more put into it than, hey, let's get, you know, we'll practice an hour before church and we'll go over a few of this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like there's time and effort and organization and things like that. So for us, music was a big part of it. The worship was a big part of it. And I think when it comes to bringing in people who don't normally go to church services or they don't really have an understanding of who God is, that might be your, that's definitely your first means of communication, because that's typically the first thing you do when it, you know,
sure,
come in. The worship service starts with the music. So sure, you can really reach a new generation of people if you play something that kind of sounds appealing to them, but then they can see the emotion coming from the people who are singing it, playing it, and the words are up on the screen so they can know for sure what you're saying. And sometimes reading those words as opposed to just hearing them take on a whole new meaning too.
Yeah, he says, an authentic generation doesn't begin with catharsis.
Yeah.
So catharsis is the process of releasing and thereby providing relief from strong or repressed emotions.
Yeah.
I don't know. An authentic generation doesn't begin with catharsis.
I just think you're
supposed to hang on to everything and not release any emotion.
Sure.
Not release anything.
Because that makes you more authentic.
You're not any repressed emotion you have.
Yeah.
You, to be authentic, you better hold on to that. Any kind of strong emotion you have,
don't let it out.
Because that makes you non-authentic.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
I don't understand that either.
I don't get that.
This new generation of Christians, Christ followers, because some people don't identify as Christian anymore. They're in the post-Christian movement, which I want to touch on in a minute too, and kind of explain that again. Because I heard it brought up the other day.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to use an example of that again. But I love what's happening with that, because when people do commit their lives to serving Jesus, it is authentic instead of just, so I feel like some people, there's a few generations that maybe, yeah, you had 20 kids in the youth group and 15 of those 20 kids probably all got saved at the same time, and you're influenced just being influenced because, my friend, went up to the altar. So I'm going to go, because I don't want to sit here and then look like a jerk or anything. And I don't think that the authenticity might have been there with a lot of that, the last set. You know what I'm saying?
No, I definitely, I'm tracking.
That's my people. Like that, I feel like my generation of Christians was the last of that.
Of that traditional.
Traditional, right. So
this is the way you find your salvation.
Right. You go to youth group because it's expected of you. You go on youth trips because it's expected of you. And when you go on the youth trips, you go and you have this quote unquote encounter with God. But did you? Right. I found myself guilty of that. Like the first couple times I would go to, the big conference we would go to every year, I would come back and be all on fire. And then, later on, years after that, I kind of thinking about it and I'm like, was I really though? Or did I do it just because everyone else around me was doing it and I didn't want to stick out and look like a jerk or anything if I sat there with my arms crossed or I sat down because I wasn't truly having an encounter with God.
Right.
And I don't think you have to have an encounter with God in an arena full of 5,000 people and the latest and greatest in contemporary Christian music up on the stage. I can have an encounter with God right here in this studio if I wanted to.
Right.
So stuff like that starts racing through my mind. But I feel like mine is probably the last of that.
Yeah, definitely.
That scene. And the next generation, like kids like Alex age, that are the new youth group kids. I just feel like there's way more authenticity there.
Yeah.
Than what mine was. Because mine started having what you see with a lot of people that are my age is they were on fire for God while they're in high school, and then they graduate high school, maybe they go off to college, and then they quote unquote fall off the wagon and go off the deep end. And now they're party animals and they don't feel the same way, or they got hurt by the church and then they turn their backs on the church. That is a lot of what my age group is going through right now.
Right.
And I think it's because there wasn't a lot of authenticity, but kids these days, they're just straight up. They're like,
yeah, they see through.
They read through the bull crap of a lot of people.
Yeah, I would go a little further to say that even with their parents or older siblings, they have seen what frauds.
Yeah.
They are. And I'm not, I don't care. Whatever. I was going to say I'm not trying to offend anyone, but honestly, I don't care.
But it's okay.
Yeah. What frauds they have become in their relationship with God.
Yeah.
With Christ.
Yeah.
Claiming to be a Christ follower. And they see the process that they went through, and it's almost like that process is holy.
Yeah.
So if you think back into the Old Testament, anytime when they built the temple and the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies to see the Ark of the Covenant, to convene with God, there was a process. It was, and it was revered, and it was, it was important and magical and special. And it's almost like the processes that these generations ahead of what we're talking about, they almost treat the process of becoming a Christian like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Like there's more focus on what happened that day, that moment.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it's life-changing.
Yeah.
But there's more focus on that rather than focus on, well, what did you do with it?
Right.
Okay, great. You went on a youth retreat, or you went down to the altar, one Sunday and you gave your heart to God. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Where are you at now?
Yeah.
How do you treat people?
Yeah.
And that these generations, the exennial, the millennial generation, sees that and says, well, wait a minute, you're treating people like dog crap.
Yeah.
Or you're more concerned with how many people are coming to church rather than how many people are suffering in your town.
Yeah. The numbers, man. Got to keep the numbers up.
You're more concerned with the suit
that
you're wearing to church.
Yeah.
Representing the way you talk when you see someone out to lunch on a Sunday. Well, brother, doing good, you know.
Yeah.
God, you know, just
tell the truth.
Hitting all the points.
Yeah.
Oh, brother, I tell you what, we're doing good and you know, we're doing this and God's doing
God's
that.
God's blessings.
Yada, and, you know, we were praying for this, but we gave it over to the Lord and this shut up.
Tell people when it sucks. Just tell them.
What's happening in your life? Because all you're doing right now is you're trying to impress me with your Christianese crap.
Yeah.
When I see you out to lunch.
Yeah.
Hey, man, how's it going? Dude, my week has sucked.
Yeah.
Or, dude, my week's been great.
Be honest with people.
2 months ago, it sucked. Man, my week has been great. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I owe it to God. That's cool. Say it. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But don't try to putting on airs.
No.
You know, and they see through it, man. They're like, I don't want to be a part of that because it's so disingenuous.
And I think the social media age has a lot to do with it because these kids are growing up in the social media age. And I think that one thing I can notice from my generation, which was before smartphones took off, before social media was even a thing, you didn't feel as connected with people as you do now. So if you're, you know, friends with someone that you go to church with, your friends on Snapchat or whatever, and they post every minute something just updating you about their life, you kind of can see what their day-to-day is rather than what you just see on a Sunday or a Wednesday.
Sure.
And you have a smaller encounter with them on a Sunday or a Wednesday, and it's an act. But in your mind, it's not an act at the time because that's all you know. So if you are tapped in with them through social media and you can see maybe they share an article of something that upset them and it's, you know, demeaning to someone else, or it's their political views and it's cutting down a group of people. You kind of look at that and you're like, I just don't feel, it makes me feel weird. It makes me feel like I don't feel right about it. And your views start to change about that person. Cause you're like, man, they act one way at church, but then on Facebook, they act a completely different way, or they get on Twitter and they rant about stuff and you just feel more connected in that sense, but you open your eyes to how they truly are. So therefore you can see through to bull crap.
I was listening to a podcast. I can't remember which one it was, but they were saying
probably ours.
It was not. Oh. They were saying that the person that you know on social media is the true person.
Yeah.
The person
I feel that way.
That you have in front of you in person.
Yeah.
They're fake. They're putting on what they want you to visually see them. But all you have to do, that is their true person, their social media.
Yeah.
It's almost like an alternate. It's flipped.
Yeah.
Where you would think that social media would be their alternate ego type deal and they would be fake there.
Yeah.
That's where their most true self is revealed.
Yeah. And then God forbid if you're connected with someone like that and you have a bad experience through the social media, like inappropriate messages or something, then that really takes off into a whole new level.
Right.
And that maybe wouldn't have happened I'm sure it happened back in with my generation, but things like that too, it makes it so much easier to get yourself into trouble with that type of stuff.
Yeah.
With this social media age that we're in. So, man, that was a long rabbit hole. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I didn't mean to do that.
All right.
I have to go back and find where I left off. There we go. But anyway, do you have anything else?
No.
So, anyway, continuing on with this post, Keith Getty and his wife, Kristen, and Kristen is spelled with a Y because she's bougie, are passionate about fostering a reformation in worship music.
Reformation.
Say it
how you want.
I'm going to say it how I want. Dadgummit. Quote, part of our campaign is to get our generation to know the great hymns of the faith, Getty told Christian Post. It's not about a fascination with the time period. It's about writing music that explains the gospel and is also beautiful art. And beautiful art lasts, he said. At the end of the day, a song you sing for 50 years is more valuable than one you sing for 50 months. Man, low blow.
Is it though?
Is it more
valuable?
No.
Listen, if that's your opinion, if that's his opinion,
yeah,
that's great. Don't impose your opinion on the masses.
Because now you have gone everything against that Jesus taught.
Exactly.
Douche. We live in the most exciting generation to be a Christian, but it's also the most challenging generation. This idea that Christianity is cool and easy is not biblical. It's a misnomer. It is a misnomer of our generation. Through music, we want to build deep believers who know and love Christ.
Who says it's cool and easy?
I don't know if anyone said it's cool and easy.
But is that because, like, famous people become Christians? Is that what he's going for?
That might be what has inspired. I mean, I know what inspired him to do this, and we'll get to that in just a second. But maybe something with Kanye.
Oh, I definitely know.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly. Definitely. Yeah. But maybe the Kanye thing is, you know, he's taking that into consideration with the whole cool and easy thing.
Definitely.
But, you know, he's probably super pissed that Kanye comes in just after years of being a quote unquote secular rapper.
And he's killing it.
Absolutely killing it with his album sales because he made a freaking awesome album.
And he's not, it's not in the Christian world.
No.
Music world.
Right.
So it's not released on a Christian label.
Right.
It's not being played on K-Loves.
And he is crushing it with sales.
Crushing it. Yeah.
Now, he still might be a cult leader. And I have seen that maybe we were the only ones that speculated that he was a cult leader. But you know what? He made a great album. You know who else made a great album?
Who?
Jim Jones.
That's right. Look, Charles Manson was a very talented songwriter.
Yes, he was. He wrote a song for the Beatles.
I'm not saying, listen, I think what, anyway, what Kanye is doing is great.
Yeah, go and Kanye.
I hope.
Kanye cares.
Nothing but the best for him.
You remember that song?
Yeah, definitely.
Words played. So he's got it in his head that hymns are just the way that Christian music is supposed to be made.
And that's fine for him. That's his personal opinion.
Right.
But don't.
Don't knock it because exactly. Some people don't like it.
You can knock it in the comfort of your own home.
Yeah. Just don't be.
Don't put articles out.
Right.
Don't be so vocal with it because now what you're doing is you're diminishing artistry.
Right.
Mr. Art.
Yeah. Artsy fartsy.
Artsy fartsy guy.
So here's the meat and potatoes of this whole thing, okay? In October, the Gettys released their latest album. There we go. We're back at I'm going to stir the pot a little bit.
And then I'm going to release an album.
And I'm going to release an album in hopes that maybe it'll sell because that's how it's done.
I'm going to get my fundamentalist crew.
Yeah, he didn't have a conversation with John Cooper from Skillet or anything.
No.
The Gettys released their latest album, Sing!
Sing!
With an exclamation point. An Irish Christmas live at the Grand Ole Opry.
That sounds good. It sounds awesome.
Sure. Recorded live at the iconic Grand Ole Opry House in Nashville, Tennessee, the Gettys brought together a group of world-class great artists to perform song selections that span across hundreds of years of celebration of Jesus' birth.
That's awesome.
Yep. And he didn't once ask Kanye to come on that album.
Definitely didn't.
Very offended. So what is it? What do you think is with these Christian artists that like to stir the pot just to generate album sales?
Yeah. So I don't know if it's more. All right. So if you belong to a label.
Yeah.
Okay. Which if you're not on SoundCloud. Sorry, I just read song.
SoundCloud.
If you're not on SoundCloud, you belong to a label. If you're an artist and you're releasing music.
Right.
When you belong to a label, that's a business.
Yeah.
Their job is not only to produce your music, that's almost secondary.
Yeah. It's really to sell it.
It's to sell your music. The way you sell something is you have to market it. Listen, if I live off the beaten path and I have an apple stand and I sell apples,
yeah,
but no one knows that I'm there selling apples, my business isn't going to get business.
Right.
But if I market myself and make myself available and let people know where I'm at and who I am, I'm going to generate more business.
Yes.
Than had I not. So the trend, and what's so funny is the trend is coming straight off of what works in the secular world.
Yeah.
If you look at any in the past 10 years, any successful artist who released an album right before, not days, weeks, months, maybe, before they released their album, they were in the news, in the press, in the media for something.
Some type of, maybe not necessarily
not maybe not a scandal,
yeah,
but something.
Yeah.
And that is generating buzz about their name.
Yeah.
And then they release the album. It's what has worked for big name artists for decades. But now it's being used in the Christian world.
Yeah. Because those are a lot harder to sell.
But the way it's being used is laughable. Because the only way you can make it work in the Christian world is you have to take a stand about something.
Yeah.
It can't be. You can't. This dude couldn't generate buzz by having a holiday party and inviting people, Christian artists of Nashville over, because TMZ's not going to go to that.
Nah.
There's going to be no press there.
Nope.
If the Biebs has a holiday party and invites people over, Christian people, whatever,
yep,
there's going to be a buzz. This guy can't do that.
Nope. Definitely not.
Can't do it.
You know, shockingly, an Irish redback hymnal Christmas album is just not what people are really wanting to hear. I'm sorry.
That might take 1% of...
Yeah. It's not hot right
the
now.
The marketplace
that's just,
right
it's
now.
Just not. And I'm not knocking it. It's just...
I wouldn't even say 1%.
That's not what people want.
Sure. So the only way for you to generate buzz as a Christian artist...
Yeah.
Without tragedy...
Yeah.
And the only reason I say that is because Toby Mac was recently in the news.
Right.
No doing of his own.
No.
Tragedy.
Yeah.
Put him in the forefront.
For those who don't know, his, I think it was his oldest son.
Passed away.
Yeah. Like 21 years old, passed away. Yep.
Put him in the news. World news. Okay. The only way without tragedy to get your press, to get your name Googleable.
I like that.
Is to take a stand on something.
Yeah.
Enter Mr. Cooper. Enter Mr. Getty.
Yeah.
That's the only way for them, and it works to a point. You know, the whoever his label is, their marketing team. Good job.
Yeah.
Because we're sitting here talking about it.
Oh yeah, it
good
it
job.
Generated buzz. There's
generate buzz. I'm not gonna go buy the album.
No.
But because of this,
but we're talking about it,
and because this came out on
it
came out on the Christian Newswire.
Right.
So and so takes stand, and so what you have now is you have, you know, Joe and Leanne, who are traditionalists, who are going to read the Christian Wire, Christian Post, whatever, Faith Wire,
yeah,
and they're going to say, you know what, I don't like it when that little millennial worship leader gets up there and sings all these
with his tight pants and his
touchy feely songs,
big floppy hats.
We should do more hymns.
Yeah.
You know what? We need to go buy Mr. Getty's album. He took a stand on this. We need to support it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Job well done, sir.
Yeah.
I commend you.
Yeah.
I commend you. But shut up.
Shut your mouth.
Because what is happening right now, you know, a lot of times we say we're not experts in things.
No.
And then,
like, well, we kind of are.
But, you know. But Ann is like, our friend Ann is always like, the things that you say you're not experts at, you are. So I feel like you and I can speak about worship music.
Yeah. It's something we're both very familiar with.
Passionate about.
And have been a part of for...
It's been a large part of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So what's happening right now in the worship music arena is an awakening where you have... You know what, Mr. Getty? I want you to go and watch the Hillsong documentary.
Oh, man, it is so good.
Where you have Joel Houston sitting there writing lyrics with his Bible open and trying to, I just got chills.
Yeah.
Trying to convey a part of scripture in his song.
Yeah.
And for him to do it masterfully.
And to do it literally minutes before they go on stage.
Minutes.
Yeah, there was the one song they were writing backstage before they went out, and
right.
Yeah, it's a great documentary. I cannot remember what the name of it is, but you can just look up Hillsong documentary and go watch it. It's very good.
But there's an awakening,
yeah,
where worship artists who are writing music are becoming lyrical theologians. They're able to take what the Bible is speaking to them and translate that into music.
Yeah.
That is so hard to do.
Yeah.
We just got through being a part of a process of writing a worship song.
Yeah.
It is not an easy thing to do, to try to take part of God's word and convey it so that the people who are listening to it not only understand it, digest it, and can connect to God with it.
Right.
There's an awakening happening right now.
Yeah. And I love it.
Where some of the best worship music that has ever been made and produced and released is happening. Hands down.
When it comes to writing a worship song, you have to take a lot of things into consideration. And it really all depends on who you're trying to reach.
It does.
So if you are trying to reach a generation, I don't want to say lost generation. I hate when that term is used. A lost generation. I would say if you're trying to reach a group of people who doesn't know Christ, like you know Christ, and you want to try, think about it. You're trying to break the ice and convince these people, first off, that you're not crazy, okay? And that Jesus is the best thing that ever happened to you. So something like a hymnal, like something that comes from a redback hymnal, just does not, it simply does not appeal to a younger generation. Point blank, period, and there's nothing you can do about it. The way that popular music has evolved over the years, naturally, that is what people are attracted to.
Yeah.
So when it comes to writing a modern worship song, you have to take that into consideration. Look at what is happening in music around you and try to incorporate as much of that as possible, if that's what your goal is. If your goal is to write songs that could have come out of that redback hymnal, you're not appealing to that generation at all. You're appealing to the people that have been going to the same church for 50 years and they're faithful givers. And, you know, they tithe every week and they're making sure.
And they might be super spiritual.
And they might, yeah, and they might be. But to completely diminish what's happening with modern worship or contemporary, everyone knows my opinion on K-Love. But if that works for some people, by all means, continue to listen to K-Love.
Crank it.
Doesn't do anything for me. Not a thing. But that's me.
Right. And
that's not you. That's Blake.
Right.
That's Blake's opinion on it. So.
Well, and here, at the end of all of this, what I have the most problem with is he is talking as if, and there's several interviews that span back a few years.
Yeah.
Where he's done this.
Same thing.
They follow his record releases.
Yeah, they do.
Don't talk. What bothers me the most is he makes it out to be, listen, these hymns, we should be writing more hymns. We need to hold on to the hymns that we have. Hymns are Christian. He makes it sound like the apostles were sitting around their campfire singing hymns.
Yeah.
Like Paul was a fan of the hymns. Like John, he was a hymn guy.
Yeah.
The redback hymnal was John's go-to.
Yeah.
Like, shut up. Because your hymns are yesterday's modern worship.
Yeah. Let it go.
Because at one point in time, those hymns.
Yeah. Was hot.
And people said, leave it be.
Yeah. And that reflects...
Why should there be music in church?
Right. And that reflects that generation as well.
Exactly.
You can't mess with things. Don't mess with it. Don't change a thing. We're going to continue to have the same church service for as long as this building stands.
These generations are looking at your hymns, and then they're looking at you, and they're saying, I want no part of that. Because if this... is what generates that, count me out.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing, and maybe not him.
Yeah.
But what he represents. You want stats? We'll throw some stats out there.
Yeah.
That, of the baby boomer generation who claim to be Christ followers, 72% do not have a personal relationship with Christ.
Wow.
72. There's a stat for you to chew on.
Good Lord.
And then it quotes, Joel from Philadelphia says, I have been going to church all my life. I have nothing wrong with the church. I love what they do and I love what they're about. I love God. I believe in God, and I believe that Jesus died for my sins. I don't live that day to day. I don't daily walk with Jesus. It's just something I do on Sundays. I've tried to instill into my family biblical values so that my children could grow up and have a sound moral compass. They too believe in God and believe that Jesus died for them died for their sins. But if you ask if I pray daily or talk to God daily or try to emulate what God is on a daily basis, the answer is no.
Honesty.
Boomers.
Okay, boomer.
Okay, boomer. But that's what they're seeing. That's what this generation, the Xennial millennial generation is coming up and seeing, whoa, wait a minute. Dude, I see what you're about. I want
nothing.
So wait a minute. You're a Christian, but you just like made the most racist comment on the world.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You're a Christian, but you just said those people when referring to the group of black people over here.
Yeah.
Whoa. Wait a minute. You're a Christian, but you lock your doors, roll your window up, and speed past the homeless dude on the side with the sign. They see that, and they're like, I want no part of that. If that's what being a Christian is, screw that.
Authenticity. Yeah.
I'm not a devil worshiper, but screw that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what they'd say.
Yeah, I mean, so it's obvious that, and I don't necessarily see anywhere in the articles that I've read about Mr. Getty. But I wonder, you know, if he was asked about his opinions on the post-Christian movement that's happening, you know, what his thoughts are. I mean, I'm 99.9% sure that he would be opposed to it. And he's probably thinking that if you consider yourself post-Christian, you're just not a Christian at all. Which, depending on who you ask, some people don't follow that traditional sense. So there's a podcast called Holy Ghost Notes that is the drummer from August Burns Red and another drummer that do this podcast, and it's drum related, but they also have faith topics. It's very good, and it's very reconstructive. I feel like, you know, over the past two or three years, I've been very deconstructive with my faith, but this, things like this helps me kind of reconstruct a little bit. And it's a breath of fresh air when it comes to my relationship with God. They recently had Aaron Gillespie from Under Oath on, and, I was talking, with Chris about this the other day. And, a lot of people turn their backs on Under Oath and all those guys and even their side projects for saying that they wouldn't consider themselves Christians in the sense of what the technical definition of what a Christian would be. You know what I'm saying? Like they would fall into that post-Christian movement. And the best way that I've heard the post-Christian term used was or described was from a Bad Christian. They brought that up before. And in terms of music, you have so many genres and subgenres of stuff. You have things like grunge music, which would have been like that first wave of what made that grunge music, the Nirvanas, the Pearl Jams, the Soundgardens. And then you had a post-grunge subgenre, which was later on after that wave of grunge had died out. It had elements, but it changed a little bit. The sound was maybe a little bit cleaner, maybe a little bit more well-orchestrated. So that would have been bands like Fuel or even Creed or things like that, you know? But in terms of music again, and that's the best way that they could describe it is because their band fell into that category. You have hardcore music, which was an evolution of punk, but it was heavier. And it
metal and punk.
Metal and punk combined, and it was its own genre, hardcore. So it's fast, screaming, it's loud, it's crunchy, and it's not very clean at all. But you had a post-hardcore scene that came about, which would have been bands like Emery and Thrice and Amberlin, where there's elements of that because they can still get heavy every now and then. Maybe they scream, but there's melodies, and it's tightened up, it's cleaned up, and that's kind of what the post-Christian movement would be. There's elements of what Christianity is in there. Hey, I love Jesus, but if...
I believe all the foundational values...
I'm with you. He died for me.
Everything.
He rose Jesus. Again.
Son of God.
Son of God. I believe it.
Three in one. Well, yeah, everything's... We got it.
But to say that I have to call myself that... but treat people like this, or think this way, or follow this rule book, I'm not for that.
Not going to do it.
Post-Christian. There you go. That's just the easiest way to describe it.
It is an era after fundamentalism.
Yes.
It's basically what it is.
Exactly.
So it follows a path of the non-denominational
yeah.
movement.
Yeah.
Where people are like, I'm tired of a denominational bylaw that says XYZ.
Yeah.
That we have to believe that baptism is full immersion and not, you know, half immersion or right. sprinkle on the head. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So we're going non-denominational because we want to still be able to worship God, but we don't want your
it doesn't little have nitpicky to have a label. Crap. Does not have to have a label. And it's such a shame because I've heard of non-denominational churches described as the place where you want to go when you can't get rid of your sin. But you want to still, for instance, always heard it like this. You go to churches like that so you can get drunk on Saturday night, but go to church the next morning and feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is wrong with you?
So the one before that you said, what did you say? The place you want to go.
Place you want to go when you like when you don't want to feel conviction.
Right. Or get rid of your sin.
Or get rid of your sin.
So the church that we attend right now is non-denominational.
Yes.
And that is all that was pumped into my head.
Yes, me
before
too.
Before I went there.
That's all I heard.
Is about that place.
Yeah.
Is... Well, that's just where you go to call yourself a Christian and keep sinning.
Right.
And then breaking that down after visiting, you know, we visited as a family for the first time and I had so many walls up.
Oh yeah. I mean,
I was like, too. Oh, here we go. No, you know, this, look at these, you know, these people aren't
yeah.
real Christian, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Come to find out some of the most spirit-led,
yes. Oh my God.
Spirit-filled people I've ever met in my life
yeah.
who live the Bible, live Jesus.
Right.
And it's so weird to me to like, it's easy to admit, but it's weird to say, man, I used to think you guys were horrible people.
Yeah.
That this place shouldn't exist.
And that's such a shame.
Right.
God, and I wish I could go back and change my way of thinking about things. I can't. All I can do is learn from it, grow from here, and try to encourage people to do the same. That's what this whole podcast is about. That's
we learn and grow
as we
right, as we do as we're we do doing this. It.
Exactly. And it is such a shame because the people that I have, my walls were up to when I first started attending, but you know, my walls were up everywhere I went.
Yeah.
I had been hurt by the church and walls just automatically went up. And to me, everyone I encountered, I had no trust at all. I did not trust anyone.
Especially that Chris guy.
that Chris guy gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Right. Still don't trust him.
But my walls were up. I didn't trust anyone. I didn't want to get involved with anything because I was like, I can't allow myself to do that again. I can't. I can't put myself through that anymore.
No.
Yeah.
And I get it because I was there. I was right there. I was going through the same thing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you say you wish you could take it back. I don't want to take it back.
Oh, because I learned from it. Because
I grew tremendously from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's the whole, this dude just sounds like a crotchety old dude
And he's not old.
I know. He's a few years older than me. He's like 5 years older than me.
I think he's in his 40s or something like 46. That. He's not a very old guy at all. And he acts like he's, you know, in his 80s and he can't stand where this generation's going.
I guarantee this Kanye thing.
Oh, that's got him fired up. I guarantee you.
Because their albums dropped both in October.
They sure did.
Yeah.
People are like, who in the crap is Keith Getty? And they're like, oh, you know, he wrote In Christ Alone. And I still had to think about it. I was like, it doesn't ring a bell.
Did Kanye cover that?
He sampled it on
what this. What if he sampled it?
It's a bonus track, a hidden track at the very end. You have to wait 20 minutes to hear it. We're almost done here. But another thing that he said in regards to this whole generation of worship leaders and worship music. Quote, we don't know all the answers, but we're trying to get people to sing doctrine and get hymn writers that are writing high quality music with artistic merit. So Brian, do you think that because he can't have the success of Kanye or Hillsong?
Yeah.
You think he just feels inferior and it's like little man syndrome. So I've got to cut everyone else around me down because I don't have the abilities to do that.
Yeah. There's some insecurity there.
Yeah.
There's definitely some insecurity there. I think there's some issues beyond insecurity as well.
Yeah.
Like I think there's validation issues with him. I think there's a lot of things going on there that, you know, he's projecting into his opinion about a craft that he takes pride in.
Yeah.
And if you can't be respectful and congratulatory on others who share your craft, it's okay to have healthy jealousy.
Yeah.
Healthy jealousy makes you want to be better, not in spite of someone else's success, but due to their success.
Yes.
Because you can see that someone can be successful in something that you pride yourself in.
Yeah.
So I think, not to be congratulatory towards other people in his field who are producing successful things that are making impacts on millions of people.
Yeah.
I think there's some issues there.
You're in the same boat as these other people. You're singing about the same God.
You're just doing differently.
Why are you separating yourself from them?
Right.
You're on the same team.
On the same team.
You just don't appeal to the same crowd.
Right. And that's okay.
You're getting jealous because, I mean, yeah, you were able to record an album at the Grand Ole Opry. And that's great. I mean, I want to visit it one day. I want to go see it. But there's a difference between recording a live album at the Grand Ole Opry.
And Red Rocks.
Or Madison Square Garden. Or Wembley Stadium or something. Like, I'm sorry. But don't use that as a means to cut everyone else down.
Sure.
Because you can't do it.
You can't. Yeah. I get it.
It's okay, buddy.
It's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. Yeah, you're successful.
Yeah.
You do you.
You got a conference.
Be the best you that you are. Just don't cut other people down in the process.
Yeah. Douchebag. Anyway, I think that's all I got. Let's take another break and hear from one of our sponsors, and then we'll wrap up with some music, Brian. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Blake.
And this is Brian.
And we want to take a second to tell you about one of our fine sponsors of the podcast. That is Faith Attire.
Faith Attire.
That's right. Finding answers in the heart. If you go to faithattire.co right now and browse their catalog, you're going to see something that you love. I guarantee it.
That's Brian, right.
What's the promo code that people can use today?
If you use the promo code NRP116, you'll get 15% off any of their goods.
Sweet. Check them out, guys. And we're back. This is a fun episode because we talked about music the whole time.
Yeah.
Something we're both passionate about. This is one of my favorite parts of our episodes is what we're about to do.
Yeah.
With our music picks. For this
week. With our music picks.
Yeah. So what do you have picked out for this week?
I got some Emery's.
Oh. Yes. I've been on a big bad Christian kick lately, which has led to my resurgence of Emery playlists popping up, and also the news that Emery and Hawthorne Heights are doing the tour again together. Yeah,
they're going to be in Columbia.
Yep, yep. With their the 15th
anniversary
of their first album, with Hawthorne Heights celebration of their first album. So. 2004 was a great year for music. But anyway, what's your song?
Name Your God!
Name Your God! So this is Name Your God by Emery.
Feel that fire beneath my toes. The world is burning all aglow. We miss the pardon, heaven knows. Here for forever is human gold.
Such a good song.
I wish I could do the Emeryland thing where they do live streams of them writing their music and you can see the songs building up. So two guys from Emery have the Bad Christian podcast. I'm sure you guys have heard that before. They've recently made some changes. I'm kind of excited about that. It's kind of sad, but it's also exciting to see where that podcast is going to go. But yeah, Emery is still alive and well, and I love looking back on tours that they've done with people and how many big tours they've done opening for a lot of huge bands and hearing the name, but I just did not listen to them until I discovered that podcast. I found the podcast by accident. I don't really know where I found it, and then realized, oh, that's the band? Oh, and I listened to him. I was like, holy crap, I've missed out all this time. And they're from right down the road.
Carolina Boys.
Carolina Boys.
Blake, what are you listening to?
So, Brian, I don't know if you heard, but on Halloween Day.
Reba McEntire.
My Chemical Romance.
Oh, that one.
My Chemical Romance announced that they are getting back together. So they haven't been together since 2013. Their last show was in 2012. And I was very excited. and I've been listening to a lot of My Chemical Romance ever since then. And I found an article, which, by the way, I tried to insert this earlier and I couldn't find a good spot, but we were talking about like sales of music and charts and like the success and like what they have to do. So My Chemical Romance announces that they're getting back together. No controversy involved whatsoever. Four of their songs peaked the top 200 Billboard charts in the past month, just from them saying, we're getting back together. Four of their songs. They haven't put out an album since like 2012. And four of their songs peaked. Anyway,
that's crazy.
So I found another article that was like, you know, the most played My Chemical Romance songs live. And this was number two.
Okay.
And it's a very good song. Most people know this one. It is called Helena. That band did a lot for me in my high school years. That was that emo, you know.
It's not a phase.
Post-punk type of post-punk.
Post-punk.
You know.
Type of post-punk.
Type of post-punk, you know. And I'm very excited that they're deciding to get back together. 514 times is how many times they've played that song live.
Wow.
Yeah. Number two now was, that was the number two song. So there was another one off that same album. Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge, that also came out in 2004, mind you. So they're also on that 15-year anniversary kick.
Why not?
So good. All right. Thank you for listening to the Not Religious Podcast, Cast of the Pod. To find out more about this little podcast that we got, all you have to do is follow us on the Twitter, on the Facebook, and on the Instagram. And that way you can keep up to date when episodes will be dropping and funny memes that we think are funny that we can share and connect with you people a little bit more. You can subscribe on many platforms that you listen to podcasts on. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please do us a huge favor. If you could go right now, leave us a review and a rating. It helps us out a ton. It helps us get noticed. We will read your review here on the show in this segment. Whether it is good or if it's bad. So we're part of the Coming Right Up Network. Our newest episodes stream on comingrightup.org every Sunday at 5:30 p.m. So please support us and the other shows. Just like See You Next Tuesday. It's a little podcast about two guys that are talking. And that's it. There are a variety of podcasts covering everything from comics to movies to the internet or just whatever comes up. So go check them out.
Yeah, go check out our sponsors. Use our promo codes. Get you some cool swaggish materials.
And if you do that and you buy one of these products from one of our sponsors and you use your discount code, post a picture of it. We'll be glad to share it all over our Facebook page or Instagram. And that way we can get the word out about these awesome companies.
Definitely.
All right. Well, also, big thanks to Andy on Facebook. He's been a more recent listener. He sent us a picture of, he listened to our zombie episode where we talked about like the fungus on the ants or whatever, but he found one that was like fungus on like a spider and it was the freakiest thing. So Andy, thank you for sending me that. That was really, really cool. But anyway, Brian, I love you.
Hey, I love you too, buddy.
And we're gonna come back next week with another hot and fresh out the kitchen episode. Bam.
Be nice to one another.
Guys, this is Blake.
And I'm Brian.
And we're here to tell you about another great sponsor of the Not Religious Podcast, and that is The Found Sheep. If you head on over to thefoundsheep.net right now, you can check out their great collection of hats, beanies, shirts, sweatshirts, things like that. Their hats are especially, especially dope. Am I right, Brian?
You are right on
point. That's right. And why don't you go ahead and tell them about their outreach there?
Yeah, so everything that they create is designed to point souls to Jesus and to remind believers that he is our good shepherd. Man, goodness. They give 10% of all of their profits to the local church, and another 10% provides outreach to people who serve in need all around the world.
Well, I'll be doggone.
That's right.
That's awesome.
An apparel company with a mission.
That's exactly right. Go check out their stuff. They got really neat stuff. And we also have a neat little promo code for all of our listeners today.
That's
Brian,
right.
What's that promo code?
If you type in not religious, that's not religious in all caps, after you fill your little goodie basket up with all of your merch, guess what? You'll get 10% off.
Woo! Heck yeah, dude.
That's just for our listeners. So thank you guys. Go ahead and check them out on the Instagrams and the Facebooks and help support thefoundsheep.net.
Boom. Boom.